Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey guys, welcome to this very fun. It's going to be fun, right, Nathan? We're going to have fun here?
Yeah, it's fun talking about the demise of other people.
Fun episode of TFL Talking Cars. And today we're going to be fixing a lot of car companies because, let's face it, they need fixing.
There are a lot of car companies out there that have some real issues, and we feel that there's a little bump in one direction or another might actually help.
So we're going to be fixing Nissan, Mitsubishi, Fiat, Cadillac, Buick, Chrysler, BMW, Audi, and Tesla. So that is coming up right now on TFL's Talking Cars.
Sit back and relax, or keep driving if you're driving. TFL Talking Cars is on the air, the world's most popular car podcast. Okay, maybe not yet, but we're working on it.
All right, Nathan, let's start with Nissan.
Nissan, yes.
They're now, in trouble.
They've had problems for a while. Nissan is one of those car companies I really want to see succeed. Part of the reason why is they have a huge presence in the United States. They build some really good vehicles. I do like their trucks.
GTR, Z,
GTR, the
Frontier.
Z, absolutely. There's some great vehicles out there. But there are three things that are letting them down right now. Politics.
Yep.
You all know about Charles Gong, and
yeah, he fled in a music case out of Japan.
I mean, he left Japan and he was in Beirut now. The thing is that whether or not that case has any merit over there.
Let's talk about that. You can't just drop that he left.
He was a naughty boy, and he got caught.
So Carlos Ghosn was the CEO of Nissan, right?
Nissan Renault.
Yeah, and he saved the company, let's face it.
Oh, he did, absolutely. Yeah. He cut a lot of corners.
Yeah.
Made a lot of sacrifices, did some good acquisitions.
But at the same time, allegedly, he also decided to kind of commingle Nissan funds with his own funds.
Which I've never heard of before. Nobody's ever done that in the entire history of human.
So apparently he bought some houses with Nissan money, stuff you don't really want to do. And then he got arrested in Japan because they take that kind of stuff very seriously over there.
Yeah, and they don't screw around in Japanese courts at all.
And then he used two American, former military dudes to, pack him away in a music case.
He was under house arrest.
Yes, he was under house arrest. They packed him away in a music case. They carried him out.
Put him on a private jet.
And he flew to Beirut,
yeah,
Lebanon, which is where he's from.
Well, yeah, he has three citizenship passports, and one of them is Lebanese.
He's a hero there, so.
Oh, yeah, he was. They have billboards with his face on them.
And now, of course, he's one of the most wanted Interpol people, but unfortunately, Lebanon does not want to extradite him to Japan.
There's no extradition as long as the government says there's no extradition. And they've been negotiating, but.
So that's what happened with him. But as a business person, he did two things, right? So he kind of laser focused the company on making money. which was good until it wasn't, because what he also did was he basically took money from the future of the company and put it into the present. And what I mean by that is what he did was he didn't spend a lot of money on developing new product, new vehicles, right? There was not a lot of money put into new product. And let's face it, cars and trucks are the lifeblood of any car company. And when you have no new product, you're going to struggle.
You know, it's interesting.
And that's where they're at right now.
Yeah, that's where they're at right now. Which they're making changes. But the thing is that there's more to it than that. Because when he was taking a large picture and saying, okay, what we need to do is diversify a little bit, spend a little bit of money making these things happen, but we're going to put a lot of money behind continuously variable transmissions. And I truly believe that CVTs have hurt Nissan.
Yeah, I agree. The CVT has not helped Nissan. They have a horrible reputation, especially in the Pathfinder.
Yeah, then they're mostly the JATCO designation from that company. Now, they have improved, to be fair. They have the reliability has improved. But the point is that they've had some shockingly bad moments when they introduced this transmission. Another thing they did, they put a lot of money behind electric vehicles.
I would argue that they single-handedly put the electric car industry, behind 10 years because of the Leaf.
They brought out an interesting vehicle. I mean, I'm not just saying that because I own one, but they fell on their face. They built this car. They
cut corners and they cut costs.
They cut corners.
They made it ugly.
They made it really ugly. I get to stare at one every day. And the thing is that they didn't bother really updating it within the right amount of time.
Well, it was worse than that. They said, this is a car of the future. We're going to be the first manufacturer to have it sold globally, which they did.
They did.
And then the vehicle they designed was, slow, with no range, with bad batteries, and, it was bashed over the nose with an ugly stick. And that's why I say they put electric cars behind, because what it did was establish the electric car as ugly, slow, inefficient, or at least, not usable, because they had this idea that all you need to do is have, 60 miles of range, because the average American drives whatever it is 30 to 50 miles every day to work. Right. So if you have 60 miles, that's plenty. Except it doesn't work that way. They single-handedly created range anxiety.
Right, and we're talking about 10 years, roughly 10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago. Yeah,
they got this going.
And if I'm emotional about this, it's because I went through the entire process. I was there, and I was given the facts. I was fed all the information. They were going to change the world. And then on the first drive of the Leaf, I said, hey, can I take it from Nissan headquarters in Nashville to, I think it was the Jim Beam or Jack Daniel's distillery, which was exactly 58 miles away, and the car had a supposed range of 65 or 70. They said absolutely not. And that was the first sign of trouble.
Yeah.
When they wouldn't even let me like drive it.
They were, and the thing is that Ghosn was behind this 100%.
Yes, he was.
And so he had the attitude of, okay, that's just about enough. We put enough money into this, let it flounder, and we'll see what happens. And indeed, they did manage to do some pretty good sales at first. But the thing is that the competition came along and blew past the Leaf, especially Tesla. We all know that. And they could have updated sooner to make this car competitive, but instead they just sat there. And companies like Chevrolet nearly tripled their mileage with the Bolt.
Yeah, okay, to be fair, the current Nissan Leaf does have 240 miles
of range.
But it took them 10 years to get there.
Exactly, and that's a real problem.
And they're still, I don't think they're still, the other problem, of course, is I don't think they're still cooling their batteries, right, which created a huge problem for them, because what happened was every other manufacturer, specifically Tesla, climate controls their batteries, right? The batteries are like us. They're like being at, between 60 and 70 degrees of temperature.
Right.
And when you don't climate control them, when you don't cool them or heat them, then especially in places like Arizona, they fry and they die, which is what happened with the Leaf.
And super cold temperatures, they don't like either.
Yeah.
So the thing is that they need, and the Aria might be part of the solution, but they need an affordable replacement for the Leaf that gets better mileage. Period. And also has a much more durable battery. And I think they're going to go there. Now that Ghosn is gone, Ghosn is gone, I think that Nissan is sort of turning a corner with certain things, but they're still doing products that not everybody really wants. And I think that that's a problem itself.
To me, Ghosn was like the typical bean cutter, right? So he didn't look at vehicles in terms of their aesthetics or the passion or, you know, the way that me and you look at cars, right? Mm. We love cars and trucks, right? You looked at them in dollars and cents terms.
Yeah.
And I think that ended up biting him in the ass, because forget about the Leaf. Let's talk about some of the other cars, right? Nissan had this incredible history of having some really iconic cars, you know, and there's this idea that you build a halo car and then that drives traffic to the dealership. And while people may not buy the halo car, they'll end up buying something else, right?
Sure.
So the Z, I've had four Zs. I love the Z. The Z is completely left to die on the vine. Finally, they came out with a new one. But,
finally.
But it took them, you know, way too long.
It was about six or seven years.
How long
has
the GTR been around now? The GTR is also now like...
Yeah, it's about a decade.
Yeah, a decade old and crazy expensive. You know, it's almost like they don't want to sell it when they release the price of the new one. This is $170,000 for a base GTR that was, you know, leading the pack 10 years ago, but now is being completely demolished by, you know, Tesla performance cars or McLarens or even
Porsches.
Yeah. And let's look at their trucks, right? Oldest truck in the business, the Frontier. And how long did it take them to? I want to say 15 years to do a new Frontier in America.
Yeah, realistically. And on top of that, not everybody's thrilled about this new Frontier, because they actually got rid of some of the options, including a smaller engine and a manual transmission. So a lot of people are upset about that. But on top of that, they also really screwed up with the Titan, which is a good truck now, but there have been problems, and they're pricing it way too high.
Well, you know, they rolled out the Titan XD, which was, of course, the diesel truck.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, look, diesel trucks in America have mainly been heavy-duty trucks.
Yep.
Right? Now you can get some full-size trucks, some half-tons, and, you know, GM has, of course, the little baby diesel. But
so
they, yeah, but they decided that there was space in between the full-size and the heavy-duty truck to roll out. And what they ended up was with a Titan, with a diesel engine, Cummins, right? Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, a small Cummins, right? It wasn't like the big Cummins in the Ram.
Right.
That basically gave you none of the benefits of the diesel and gave you all the drawbacks, right? So you had this tweener truck that you know, didn't tow as much as a heavy-duty truck, and was certainly not as fuel efficient, you know, as a midsize or as a full-size.
Yeah,
right. And so, like, what's the point of this thing?
It was a marketing screw-up. There was a simple way to make this truck far more competitive. They should have called it a half-ton.
Yeah.
The option is, if you want to get the diesel, you get this XD package, which gives you a beefier frame.
I think people would have ate that up at that time when it came out.
And they would have absolutely annihilated the half-ton competitors out there. But no, they wanted this in-between vehicle. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the XD, honestly. I wish it had a beefier axle, but that's a different story. The point is that the marketing screwed it up. First of all, they introduced the XD before they brought out the new regular Titan. It should have been the other way around.
Yep.
And they outpriced themselves when the new generation a couple years ago of the Titan came out. The interior wasn't even competitive with Toyota, or it was just on par. And Toyota, in terms of interiors, was ugh. So the point is that they just weren't very competitive. It's like they didn't want to try all the way.
And then some of the cars they have are excellent, right? I love, like, the Maxima, right? Except it needs to be all-wheel drive.
Oh, it needs to get rid of the CVT. It's got over 300 horsepower, and they're getting rid of it.
Yeah, anyway. But I'm just saying, it's not brain surgery to know that if that thing were a regular transmission and all-wheel drive, or a regular transmission and rear-wheel drive, it would do really well.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would save them, because, you know, that segment of car is dead. Luckily, the segment of car that isn't dead, they're actually doing pretty well in, right? So the Rogue is selling really well.
Yeah.
They just came out with a new one.
Yeah, it's actually really, I really like the design. It's beautiful.
Yeah, so, you know, and the Altima's doing well.
Another one that has an excellent interior, and now you have all-wheel drive as an option, and you can get a turbo, not both, which is a shame.
And the Versa is okay, you know? I mean, it's...
Yeah, and the new Sentra, I stand behind that car 100% as one of the smoothest vehicles in its class. Yes, once again, CVT, but beautiful interior, very quiet, handles quite well. Very efficient,
and for
really
some,
nice car.
Some absolutely unbeknownst reason to me, Nathan, they got rid of the Xterra, which was at a time when, you know, lifestyle vehicles like the Jeep were Jeep was selling 25,000 Wranglers, and Toyota was selling, you know, a boatload of 4Runners, and they got rid of the Xterra.
I did a story on that, and I did some real research on it. One of the reasons they got rid of the Xterra was because both the EPA numbers and their safety numbers were in question.
Right, but why not redesign it?
And sales numbers had fallen off a cliff.
Right, but once again, it was ancient.
Yes, they should have redesigned it. They should have put it on a different platform, and they should have basically kept the flavor in there, because you know, Jeep for a while, because Toyota got out of the game too, except they had they kept the 4Runner.
Yeah, they kept the 4Runner.
But, you know, there was very little that competed with Jeep, and so they had the whole thing to themselves.
I don't know.
Nissan should have kept competing. Now, they did reintroduce the Xterra overseas, but it's basically the Nissan Terra, which is very similar to my old Nissan Pathfinder, basically. It's, you know, seven passenger SUV, but it's not the actual Xterra we love.
And what they flushed when they got rid of that was the most critical thing, which was a loyal fan base, right?
Yes.
And an aftermarket support system, because there was tons of people who had, over the years, built up small companies that were making aftermarket parts. So you had this really loyal fan base, owner base. You had all these companies that would have just loved to, you know, build the next set of bumpers and winches and, roof racks.
Oh, Cal Mini and some of those other ones are still out there building components for the old used ones. Yeah. So the point is, had they kept that going, they could have kept that market. And the thing is that it would have been fan service, but would that be a bad thing? Not necessarily. Not only that, but they should have built it and made it a discount version of something that you can get from Jeep or Toyota, made it cheaper so people can actually step into an off-roader. But they didn't do that. They really missed an opportunity.
And I think there's like one thread that runs throughout these entire discussion, and that's Carlos Ghosn, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he had, you know, you could see his fingerprints on all these decisions.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at numbers, the Xterra's not selling, gone, right? Why do we need a new Frontier? The old one's still selling, so let's keep building the old one.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It was all based on numbers and spreadsheets as opposed to, like, what the market wants and what the owners and enthusiasts need.
There's no argument here, but I think we should move on to Mitsubishi, which is connected to Nissan.
Yeah, and let's before we do that, we can't help but mention Infiniti, but I think that's a whole different conversation.
That's a different conversation.
So we'll leave it for another show.
Yes, yes. Infiniti is a whole different thing.
All right, Mitsubishi, that's one of your favorite brands, Nathan.
Well, okay, now, guys, I like old Mitsubishi. I like it back when they were building Evos and Monteros.
Dude, Mitsubishi had one of the, and this is not something I'm just pulling out of my hat, right? It's true. They had one of the best engineering teams for the all-wheel drive.
Without off-road, a doubt.
In the automotive business, right? They were head and shoulders above
everybody else. They were winning Dakar. They still win Dakar on older platforms. They were winning Dakar. They were winning Rally Ray, the WRC. They were into everything. They were one of the few companies that could build something that was comparable, if not better, than Subarus that were competing. They were absolutely out there terrifying the Germans and other Japanese companies because they had real engineering teeth. The problem was, they fell into new management after lots of problems.
There was a scandal.
There were actually a couple scandals, but one of them was similar to Charles Ghosn with one of the people from Japan who also, they also lied about gas mileage and some other things too in the past, which was overseas, not here. The point is that they also adopted this whole thing of let's just update and not really create anything new.
Actually, I think it's worse than that, Nathan. They went from, let me give you a perfect example of what happened with Mitsubishi, right? Okay. They went from the premier engineering 4x4, all-wheel drive vehicles, things like cars like the Evo, right? Mm-hmm. The Pajero, mm-hmm. right? To the iMEV. Right.
Well,
let's face it. The iMEV, it was a first go-ahead in electric car, but it was basically a glorified golf cart.
You know, the iMEV actually had a gas brother in Japan.
It was a little tiny gas engine.
Yeah,
K-cars.
And it was a logical build at the time. But by the time they introduced it in the United States as an electric vehicle, it was already losing out to the Nissan Leaf in terms of sales, and it just wasn't as well packaged.
But it's kind of like going from, you know, having a moonshot engineering team, right?
Yeah.
To doing like high school science projects, right? I look at the two vehicles. You look at all the tech that is in those, really iconic Mitsubishis, you know, and I think the Evo has got to be one of the most iconic.
Yeah. By far.
Yeah. And to go from that to an iMEV. And like we're completely changing direction here. I'm good with that. But dang, dude, you know, wow me with it. Don't come up with an electric car that looks like, you know, an egg with wheels that has 50 miles of range.
And the design language is really iffy right now, I would say, at best. Now there are a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, Mitsubishi is actually doing better than they were a few years ago. Nissan did acquire and became a partner of Mitsubishi. And because of the extra funding and redistributing a few things, changing the dealership network, lowering some prices, they're actually doing quite well. On top of that, They managed to make that JATCO transmission work a lot better than Nissan, ironically, even though they use the same type of transmission. It's slightly different, and they have it in a few of their vehicles, and it's considered far more reliable if you look at the numbers. But the bottom line here is that this was a company that led when it came to off-roading, to sports car racing, to sedan racing, to rallying, all this stuff. They had all of this passion, and they got rid of pretty much all of it. And that, I think, is what really affected people. You have to ask yourself when you buy a product, and I had a Mitsubishi not too long ago. I've had a few. The last one I had was the Outlander GT, the first generation of the Outlander GT, and it wasn't a bad vehicle. And they went and they even softened that more. And, you know, the thing is that fans are really important to a car brand, and when you can't inspire them, when you can't give them something that really makes them go, wow, one Halo car, just one, then you're hurting yourself is what you're doing, and that's what Mitsubishi has done.
All right, and to be fair, the iMiEV was a small, you know, electric car that didn't necessarily represent the brand, but I'll give you the other car that they, one word, Nathan, Mirage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's,
you know.
And the thing is that we actually discussed the possibility of buying a Mirage.
Yeah, because we were talking about
it. Considered one of the worst vehicles in the United States. And that's not based on our taste. That's based on the worldwide taste. If you look at other people who say, you know, well, it's not a great car. Because it's one of the least expensive.
Sure.
And I've driven a few of them now. They will not, by the way.
Rolling on 13s, dude.
I know. They will not deliver them to the Colorado fleet or to the Rocky Mountain fleet. I think part of the reason why is because high elevation with an engine that puts out less than 100 horsepower would be extremely slow. But my point was when I talked to them, this is one of the, it gets excellent mileage. Give us a manual transmission one. And we'll drive it around a little bit and see what, you know, and they're like, no, I'm not too sure about that. They would rather have it at sea level. But the thing is that I've driven them here in Colorado and at sea level. And they are extraordinarily slow. They're rather flimsy. Not the world's most uncomfortable car, surprisingly. But we are talking about something that you really do feel like you bought something that's a discount vehicle. And if you spent just a tiny bit more money and got a Chevy Spark, that vehicle's so much better. So That's another issue.
But there are some good cars in the lineup. I like the Eclipse Cross, right? I think that's a pretty good
it's a vehicle. Decent vehicle. We've had a few of them.
Yeah, I like the back end of it, the styling. It does.
Not everybody likes it, but you do.
I know, but I like it. Yeah. You know, and they are working now on plug-in hybrids, and you know they are getting to kind of the same place that a lot of the other manufacturers are at. But they don't have a full electric car, unlike the Koreans, right? They certainly don't have a hydrogen car, unlike the Japanese.
Yep.
And they certainly have, at this point, no Halo car.
Nothing. There's nothing out there that's really compelling.
I mean, if I were to fix that company, I would say bring back the Evo.
At the very least.
Yeah. Bring back the Evo. You know, bring back, here in America, we don't get it, but bring back the Pajero Montero, whichever. You know what I mean? And make it a serious.
They still build the Montero overseas.
Yeah.
They just don't have them here.
Yeah, build, you know, make it a serious, big, family hauling, luxurious crossover, and you know, show us your engineering chops, and get rid of the Mirage.
Well, the Mirage, unfortunately, is one of
it's hurting their reputation.
It's hurting their reputation, but they still sell them.
I get that, yeah. But I was at the LA Auto Show, and you're like, you know, they were right next to Honda at the it was the last show we were at, right?
Mm-hmm.
In LA, so they were right next to Honda, and they were kind of in the corner, and there you are, Honda's got the Passport, it's got the, you know, it's got its whole lineup of
cars. Civic, the Fit,
the Type R, right? Is there, you know, and there's all this engineering on display, all these like really glitzy cars, and then there's, you know, Mitsubishi right next to them. You know, with the Mirage. I mean, the contrast couldn't be greater.
I always felt that when they got rid of the Lancer.
Yeah. Oh, Lancer. Diamante.
Diamante was weird.
It was a Cadillac copy. I mean, a BMW copy.
Yeah, BMW copy.
What was the one with the four? You know, think about, we forgot about that. The GT, VR.
You're talking going way back, the 3000 GT?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. Well, I kind of had one.
Four-wheel steering. Turbocharged.
Yeah, the body can actually move around. Twin turbocharged, by the way.
Twin turbocharged, active aero. I know. I mean, this is like crazy
stuff. That was still one of my favorite cars of the time. Long story about a junkyard car that I bought from an auction, but I crashed it. Anyway, the point is that going back real quick, they got rid of the Lancer. I always thought that the Lancer design on the outside was beautiful. It's a really cool-looking car.
Lancer was cool.
And then you could go from a CVT front-wheel drive absolute base model all the way up to the Evo. And the Lancer line was
Jonesing for, I would love an Evo 10. I'm still jonesing for
that would be fantastic, and good luck.
And you Paul, know. You know, the former Stig, he still has an Evo. It's his favorite car.
Oh, yeah.
He tows with that thing.
he goes in the snow, he tows with it, he off-roads with it, you know, and he is a professional race car
he
driver.
He tows like a sailboat with it or something. I know, it's crazy.
But the thing is that car, just the Lancer alone, I'm not just talking about the Evo, the Lancer alone, they had years to update the interior and to make it competitive, and they never really did it. And it was something that Roman and I noticed. If you recall, the last few Lancers before they got rid of them, we would complain about the interior being this cheap plastic, just like it was 10 years ago when it came out, or 8 years ago when it came out. That was one of the problems, and I think that just like Nissan, that hurt Mitsubishi, not being able to make those updates to keep Americans happy.
You know, we're in a seismic shift. It's obvious that the world's changing and we're going to electric cars. Whether you agree with that or not is a whole different conversation. But
electrification, I would say.
It's happening. Mm-hmm. And there's this really great moment in time right now for companies to be the first, right? Mm. To be like the first to build an all-electric off-roader. Doesn't exist right now.
Technically, I mean, people would argue that the GMC Hummer is, but it's not out there yet for the public.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Yeah.
It's just looking at is a mock-up.
And the Rivian will be first, but that's also, I'm saying like a car, like a crossover, you know, be the first to build that, or, you know, be the first to completely electrify the entire lineup. You know, there's a lot of opportunities here for Mitsubishi.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a question of money or engineering talent, but, you know, I would say the company could completely kind of change its brand image at this point and do really well.
They're trying. Recently, they let out a few leaks about some of the styling updates that they're doing, some engineering updates. Even the Mirage is getting an update. I'm hoping one day it will actually allow us to drive one of theirs. But the point is that they're making these incremental steps, and they need to make big steps. And they're just not doing
that. And, you know, I think they know.
Oh, of course they do.
Yeah, the sales are, you know, the sales are what the sales are.
They've improved.
All right, well, let's keep going. Fiat, dude.
Yes, look what's behind me. I find that this vehicle is probably the biggest culprit for where Fiat is right now. Now, we're not talking about FCA. FCA as a whole is doing quite well. But Fiat is not. And in the United States, Fiat sales are practically non-existent. Now, they did get rid of their regular 500, ironically one of their better cars. The little 500 was, especially the Abarth, fantastic little car. They had a little turbo version that wasn't quite the Abarth. That was also great. They were decent cars, decent reliability. The 500L, which was one of the first on their new larger platform, hurt the company. Why? Just look at it. I mean, it is not exactly a great-looking vehicle. It's gangly. But more importantly, it's been unreliable. And it just doesn't fit the ethic of the American buyer.
I remember when we first started doing Fiat videos, right? The very first comment was, fix it again, Tony, right? That's
right,
what
right,
Fiat
yeah.
stands for. And Fiat had this reputation in America of not building reliable or quality cars.
Right.
So when they came back to America, you'd think that this would be like, hey guys, you know, we have this reputation of fix it again, Tony.
But we're going to change that.
We're going to change that. But unfortunately, yeah, it like the reputation preceded them and it stayed with them. And it's just hamstrung them from the, you know, very get-go, and it's still there, unfortunately.
And they haven't been doing a very good job with getting vehicles out of the American market we don't want and bringing us vehicles in the market we do want. And here's a really good example. They have one crossover. This doesn't count. This is basically a four-door hatchback. They have one crossover, which is decent. The Fiat 500X, it's okay, but that's it. The Fiat, the 124?
It's, you know, Fiata.
It's a Fiata, and it's their best, most reliable vehicle, mostly because a lot of the components are actually from a Miata.
Yeah, it's built in Japan.
Yeah, but the 1.4 liter turbo is actually
right.
Fiat source.
Engine, but it's built in the same.
Yeah. The thing is that they haven't had the product that really has resonated with the American public, so they read the tea leaves wrong. But and they knew this early on. They should have kept and updated the 500 and had that as a small vehicle, an electric vehicle, which they sort of did.
It's and, a California compliance car.
But you know, have that. And then bring us cars we really want. There's Fiat overseas has some really cool vehicles, which we're not seeing, including SUVs and pickups. And they could have brought them here and had some interesting competitive vehicles.
Dude,
and they didn't
I was
do it.
At the Geneva Auto Show, and Fiat rolled out this badass pickup. And I'm like, why is that not here?
The Strada, right?
Yeah,
with fully lifted and it had like all
that. Yeah.
And it's a car-based ute, you know. But it's still something that could compete here because, look, they're selling 50,000 Honda Ridgelines a year, and that's one vehicle. This could have been very competitive and possibly even better. So
It would take imagination because you're straddled with a chicken tax, right? That's
right.
That's a problem. But nevertheless, Fiat has a very small window opportunity, I think, left in its life, because obviously Fiat's part of FCA and they just merged with
Peugeot,
and Stellantis is going to be the new parent company, and the head of Stellantis is going to be the CEO of Peugeot, and he's known as a drastic cost cutter. So
it could be another Charles Ghosn situation.
Yeah, it could be. I'm not sure how much life Fiat has, especially because the dealers have really nothing to sell that people want to buy, and that's really harsh.
But it's the truth.
But it's the truth, right?
Once again, Roman and I both agree that the Fiat 500, especially the Abarth, is a great car. The Abarth was fantastic. The fact that we never bought one for the studio has always been surprising to me because there's so much fun, but just nobody really wanted.
It's like if you went to a steak restaurant and you want a steak and they go, we got potatoes, we got,
we got everything. We have steak sauce too, but sorry. No,
we got
no
a great dessert,
steak.
But yeah. We have no steak.
How about chicken? Would you prefer chicken?
No steak.
It's not quite giving the American buyer what they want.
Or better yet, if you went to an Italian restaurant and they had no pasta.
There you go.
It took me a while.
Now you threw the whole Italian thing at Fiat. Yeah. And the thing is that I really do like unique designs, and Fiat has a lot of that going on. Their interior designs are really cool looking. The quality has been an issue, and they cannot be unreliable in the United States and hope to sell, because that reputation comes and bites them. Once again, the regular 500 is actually a fairly reliable car by comparison with all the other ones. This one behind me, the 500L, which is their most polarizing vehicle by far, and one that doesn't sell. I think they sold like 100 last year. This car is not very reliable. It has a lot of quirks and gremlins. And on top of that, it's just something the American people truly do not want.
Yeah, so, the way you fix Fiat is have them import, the kinds of cars that are very popular here.
Bring us the Strada. Bring us some of the cool sporty cars that you have that are not based on, a Miata.
Yeah, exactly. I hope they survive, but we'll see. All right, Cadillac, Nathan, that's an interesting car company.
Mm.
Cadillac has been trying to reinvent itself as long as me and you have been doing this.
They made a major mistake a while ago, and I think it started the ball rolling in the wrong direction.
You know what my biggest issue with Cadillac is? Mm. They're trying to out-German the Germans, right? They took all these, they said to themselves, Audi, Volkswagen, Volkswagen, but certainly BMW and Mercedes are very popular.
Right.
So let's forget about, American luxury and let's aim at European luxury.
Yep.
And that was a mistake, right? They called it art and science. They created this whole design language. But basically it was like, let's out-German the Germans. And to me, my dad had a Cadillac Eldorado.
Yep.
And here's the thing, right? In Europe, we've been to Europe, right? They've got very twisty, fast roads. Reward performance vehicles. We have dead straight interstates that reward very comfortable vehicles. And somehow Cadillac decided that they wanted to build cars for Europe and not cars for America.
They also wanted to... Except for
the Escalade, which is the one that sells.
Yeah, it does sell. They wanted to appeal to a younger audience, and they still do in some cases with the Escalade. But here's where I think they went wrong. It was about 5 or 6 years ago. First of all, they moved their headquarters to New York.
To New York, why would you do that?
All that
the world's most expensive real estate.
Yeah, and their president at the time.
That's where, the cool,
cool and hip. Let's do the cappuccino.
Drinking.
And I have nothing against New York.
Hipsters were living.
But moving something that is... in Detroit or whatever, and moving it to New York is just a terrible idea. And by the way, they moved back. They sold off that real estate and moved it back.
Yeah, of course,
because it was a bad idea.
You've got all your engineering team, you've got all these engineers, you've got your production in Michigan,
right.
And you're going to go to New York just because there are a bunch of hipsters that are,
But it goes beyond that because it's bad financial sense to make that happen. And then on top of that, about 5 or 6 years ago, I think it was, their president said, we're no longer in the car business. You remember when she said this? It was their head of PR. We're no longer in the car business. What we want to do is build you a good product. And she mentioned iPhones. So basically she was comparing her car company with Apple. And that was a terrible idea. Saying that we're no longer a car company, saying that you're no longer building an enthusiast car, even though you still are, but just saying that was a terrible idea.
And they bet on sedans also, which was bad, right? right? And they built, like, remember this? Remember the wagon, right?
Oh yeah, the CTSV wagon.
Yeah,
oh,
that was great. Mwah. I mean, I can't, you know, thank you Cadillac, but you know, you're not going to survive by building a vehicle for 500 automotive journalists. You know what? And then the worst thing that they did, I think, was they looked at, you know, like BMW and Mercedes and decided to rename all their cars with, you know, three letters and a number, and you know, and now they're doing this like stuff where it's about some weird torque number, right?
Dude,
come on, really? The Fleetwood, the Eldorado, you know, these are classic American names. Just embrace Cadillac, embrace your heritage,
yes.
Own it. You know, bring back the American luxury car. Lincoln is doing that, and they're being successful at it, right?
Well, no, they've actually killed off a few of their vehicles.
Well, the car, but you know, reinvent yourself as the American luxury vehicle. Yeah. Not, and I'm saying vehicle, not car, because it might be an SUV, right? And lose the XT4, the XT. It seems so obvious to me. I'm sure there's very smart people at Cadillac who are looking at the way the wind is blowing. But to me, I would love to see another, you know.
Well, so here's the big change with Cadillac, and that is that they announced recently that they want to move to an all-electric platform, not just with one vehicle, but eventually.
But it might be too little too late.
It might be, but that's one of the reasons why the, what was it, that they have a name for that new one, well, whatever it's called. It's a new name, it's a musical name, Lyric, I think it was Lyric?
Lyric, that's right.
So the new Lyric, which I, by the way, think that the design is spectacular, it looks really cool, at least on paper. That vehicle has been pushed up for its debut. They want to bring it out faster because I think they realize exactly what you said, too little, too late. To fight Tesla, and let's face it, that's exactly what you're going to do if you're going into EVs. You need a full line of vehicles that goes head to head and beats them pretty much at every level, including price. If you can do that, then you can resuscitate a brand like Cadillac. That's my personal opinion.
And I love Cadillac. Like I say, you know, my dad, when he became successful in America, that was the mark of success, right?
My family would buy a new Cadillac every year and cycle through it every
year. Exactly. And of course, you can't. You can't reinvent those days. Those days are over. But you can, you know, reinvent that image and use it as part of your current marketing and sales and design strategy.
And there's so many other questions.
And the design's not working, right? This art and science that they're doing, these kind of very angles, it's just not working. If by now it's not taken off, it's not going to take off.
And I still think that some of their cars are actually kind of good looking. But they spent billions on this Blackwing engine. It showed up in like two cars and that's gone. They're not using it anymore. They're not using it on anything else in GM.
And then the weird thing, the other thing I don't get is the V used to be like this fire-breathing monster, right?
Oh my God.
Supercharged, right, out of a Corvette,
basically.
And now the V has become like, you know, they actually went with less horsepower for the latest version. That makes
unless
no
you get
sense.
The V, you know. And the thing is, they did exactly the same thing that BMW did. BMW has their M badged version vehicles, which have like an M kit, but it's not actually an M car. Same with some AMG stuff out there. So Cadillac decided, we'll take that V, which everybody knows means super, you know, velocity, whatever you want to call it. But we're just going to say, no, there's a lesser V out there, so you can get it looking fast, but it's not actually fast. Terrible idea. Don't mimic the Germans. Be yourself. Do it your way.
Yeah, you know, I've said this before, but Nathan, for us to go to Phoenix from here, right, it's three turns. Mm-hmm. Three frickin' turns, and that's 1,000 miles. Turn right on I-25, go to Albuquerque, turn right, go to Flagstaff, turn left. And that's the only turn you're going to do.
Yeah.
Right? And to do that for 1,000 miles, 1,600 kilometers for you Europeans, right, means that you need something that's extremely comfortable, that has room for a lot of cup holders, that has a long range, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these are the things that I think American drivers want and appreciate. And I think this is why pickups have become the ideal road trip vehicle, because they have that.
They have excellent rides and usually fairly long range.
Yeah.
Especially if you get a
diesel. Utility, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, right now, if you want to do that kind of driving, you're really given a choice of a pickup truck if you want the ultimate road trip vehicle or nothing. Why don't you recreate that Cadillac ride, that floaty ride? Maybe because I'm getting old, you know, but I get really tired of, like, you know, every car having to be tested on the Nürburgring. It makes no sense to me.
You know? Unless it's a sports car. But you know, they're doing these things with, well, their sedan can go around the ring in 7 minutes and 5 seconds. The thing is that Your average American driver who's sitting there with a super big gulp just driving along going, yeah, but I can go around Nürburgring really quick. But as I'm driving right now down the highway, I'm thinking that this car is mighty uncomfortable because the suspension is so stiff. What Roman wants is an electric pickup truck for Cadillac. So make that happen, Cadillac. Basically what you just said.
I was just thinking about that. I was like, it wouldn't have been kind of cool if instead of making the Hummer EV, they had actually made it a Cadillac.
Well, they have sort of with the Lyriq, because the Lyriq will have some of the same technology that this Hummer will have.
But you see what I'm saying? Think about that. If the H2 EV had come out as a Caddy.
Across the line, they should have done something similar, like Chevy, Buick, all of them. They should have done it. I agree.
So, Nathan, we've got another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 brands, and we've kind of spent, much of the time discussing these first four. So why don't we do this? Why don't we let you guys comment in the comments below, let us know what you think, and then we'll do this next week as a part of part two of the show.
And keep in mind, guys, that we're not talking about just sales numbers alone. We are talking about what we think might actually help these companies. So, to summarize,
how do you fix Cadillac? We didn't talk about that.
Well, you just said it, dude. Yeah. They need a pickup truck that's EV, apparently.
And I think bring back real names.
I agree with the names 100%. They need to bring back the Brougham, Fleetwood, Eldorado.
This weird like torque number for whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. Yeah. Cadillac needs to embrace their roots and bring back American buyers. I think are savvy enough to figure out, oh, an XT437, a Brougham. Ooh, what I mean?
And redefine their luxury as American luxury.
Right.
Don't define it by ride or by handling, but define it by the materials and the kind of the way it makes you feel while you're sitting in the thing, right? I think Ford is figuring it out with Lincoln, right, with the Navigator. Where
the Navigator and their Corsair, which I think is a brilliant vehicle.
And the Corsair. Yeah. And I think Cadillac might take a hint from that company and kind of reinterpret their past and then, mix it in with what today. One of the things you could do easily would be to redefine luxury by having renewable and recyclable materials, right?
Yeah, most Americans who buy Cadillacs wouldn't care.
I mean, to me, I know like Rolls-Royce, for instance. Let's talk about Rolls-Royce, right? What they do is they pride themselves on getting leather from cows that are only in parts of Europe where there's no...
They're British cows with monocles in their eyes.
They're cows where there are no barbed wire fences so that there's no imperfection.
Right.
Right? But to me, that feels really old.
The whole thing just feels like
your dad's. Like, I give a rat's ass if the leather comes from a cow that's brushed up against the barbed wire fence.
Yeah, give me a cow from Detroit, man, that has some bullet holes in it. I'm down with that. Just put that on there.
But you see what I'm saying? In a way, Mercedes just did this, right? And somehow, this old-fashioned luxury, this notion is that you have to have, like, the champagne flute glasses and the refrigerator in the back and the humidor. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, guys, really? I mean, would your wife let you smoke a cigar in your...
No, I can only smoke cigars in certain vehicles, but sure as hell's not going to be the family car. But the thing is that
here, Nathan, here's your humidor. Enjoy your cigar.
For Americans, a refrigerator and a microwave might be a really good thing in a car.
But redefine that. Redefine that. It's not a fluted champagne glass.
No. It's for your bud. You put your bud there. There you go, guys. The thing is that the Cadillac, all of the cars that we've discussed, all the car companies we discussed, I think what the overall theme here is they've lost their way. It's not necessarily that they're about to die. It's not necessarily, the fact that they could, that they're building poor products. If you combine everything together, I think that they've all kind of lost their way and they're not speaking to the buyer.
Yeah. I mean, the aesthetics of the next generation, and look, we're not that next generation, obviously. but I look at my job here at TFL as kind of keeping my finger on the pulse, what's popular and what's coming, right? All that, the humidors, the fluted champagne glasses, even the airline seats, right? That they always you can sit like a private jet with them. That all feels really like my parents' generation. Like, I want a different definition of luxury that speaks to who I am. And not that speaks to who my parents were, because, you know, I mean, think about that, like this notion of, like, you know, a glass of champagne and a big cigar. That to me is just disgusting. Sorry, it is.
It's not, but okay.
But
it's not. If I could drink and smoke a cigar in the back of a vehicle as I'm driving,
to me, it doesn't evoke. It doesn't evoke
to most people. I would agree with you. I get that.
You see what I'm saying? I'm not criticizing people who smoke or who drink champagne. Go ahead. But I'm just saying, to me, that does not evoke luxury anymore.
I think what we're talking about
here success
is the fact that we have all this modern tech that can give us a whole bunch of new levels of luxury that we're just not utilizing, even though it's already out there. And I think that massaging seats really should take the place of a spouse, so they should bump it up a little bit more, so that way you don't need to get married. You don't know where I'm going with this? Okay. The point, but I think that everything that a vehicle is, and Cadillac does this really good cruise control system.
Yeah.
The Super Cruise, which is a really impressive piece of tech.
Yeah, exactly. To me, you know, luxury now is synonymous with technology, right? It's more with this than it is with the cigar, right? This to me says more about luxury and about success than the cigar does.
Yeah, but I can smoke a cigar while I'm using this, which is really good. The thing is that if we can incorporate a modern take on luxury, not the old version of it, but still make it that it's somewhat nostalgic, I think that's the direction a Cadillac at least needs to go into. But with all of these car brands, a lot of them are falling behind. Maybe they're adding a lot of tech on one end, but they're not doing enough with performance on the other. The whole thing is that they need to learn to communicate with consumers, with you guys. And I think that all the companies we've mentioned are having a real problem with communication.
Yeah, and the other thing, like, you know, that I'm getting a sense of is that for a lot of, like, Tommy's generation, right, luxury is, or at least success is more indicative of experience than it is of things, right? So they'd rather, let's say you got $100, right, you could go buy something with that $100, or you could have an experience with that $100, a nice dinner, or, you know, they'd more likely have that experience than the thing.
If it wasn't COVID, yes, I would agree.
Right, if it wasn't COVID. I mean, everything's kind of out of whack right now. But you can incorporate that into you know, the brand, right?
Right.
As opposed to, it's not about the fluted glasses and the champagne that's in there. It's about the experience of whatever you decide. You know, there are people that are much smarter than me who can figure that out. But it feels like I say, it feels like they're still playing by a set of rules that no longer exist.
You know what they need to do? I know this sounds strange because I think you and I both agree that it makes it difficult for life, but SEMA turns out cars that a lot of people actually want, which are one-offs. I think that the automakers need to start paying attention to what
more
people,
bespoke,
right? More bespoke style.
And you can do that
nowadays with automation. There's no reason.
Easier, yeah.
Mini proved it. You could build online a Mini which has a million different things that makes it unique to you, and they're able to produce the vehicle even in England, which is a place where, you know, frankly, I didn't think that they're going to be able to keep up with automation, but they can turn that vehicle out and make it completely bespoke, almost completely unique for the owner.
So it becomes a statement about you as opposed to, you know, a commodity.
Well, that's exactly it. People like individualization. So why not have that with every car company that's out there, especially the ones on this list, where they have a lot more customization available online, but immediate results too. People nowadays don't like to wait 6 weeks to get to the car or 6 months to get their car. How long do we wait to get our broken Land Rover?
I don't know, dude, but I'm saying
months.
If I were in one of these car companies, I would much sooner put a PSP, right, into them than I would a refrigerator with, you know, I mean, that to me seems much more relevant.
No, I need a refrigerator, Roman. I don't need a fluted thing, but I just...
All right, so you want the PlayStation and the...
I could use both. Okay. It would work for me.
And the humidor.
And the humidor, please.
All right. Well, there you have it, guys. Please let us know in the comments below what you think. If you guys are looking to buy or sell a pickup truck or a big old trucky crossover SUV thing, head out to TFL Bids, our new auction website. And we've been having kind of a rocky start with it, Nathan, so we're kind of rejiggering it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the vehicles that have been up there have had, I would say, in my opinion, very excessive reserves.
Yeah, and so, you have to be realistic out there.
Yeah, and so we're gonna be pushing hard, and we're going to start with our own vehicles. We're going to be selling a couple of vehicles that you guys know and love with no reserve. So stay tuned for TFL to see what vehicles those are and when those are going up on TFL Bids.
I'm guessing Tommy's Mini is not going up there.
No, Tommy's Mini. That's his Mini. But the Touareg.
That Touareg's actually been really remarkable.
Yeah, it has been really remarkable. No reserve, dude.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go, guys. More than enough reason to check in there and see. And it has really bitching tires on it, too.
It does. It does. And everything else. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. If you're watching, thanks for listening. If you're listening, remember, go to TFL Car, TFL Truck, TFL Now, TFL Off-Road, TFL Classics, TFL Bids, and TFL Goodbye.
See ya.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.